This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A panel of retired generals from the U.S. military says climate change and the way we use energy are threats to national security. Lieutenant General Richard Zillmer retired from the Marine Corps in 2011. He's now a member of the Military Advisory Board for the nonprofit CNA Corporation. That group studies the effects of energy consumption and climate change as they relate to the military. General Zillmer will address an event hosted by the Wake County Young Republicans later today, but first he joins us on the State of Things. General Zillmer, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Good afternoon, Frank. Thanks. It's nice to be with you today.
You spent 36 years as a Marine. How did this idea of energy consumption come to you, and how did you first see it as a threat to national security?
Well, Frank, I think my interest in the drawing to CNA began probably back in 2006, 2007. At that time, I was the commander of the Multinational Forces West in Anbar, Iraq. And during the course of that year, we really saw the nature of the fight itself change significantly in terms of the IED attacks, the ambushes. And when we looked at, tried to analyze what was behind the targeting, we certainly noticed that convoys were not exclusively, but a large part of that. And we were certainly vulnerable in terms of the movement of supplies across these main supply routes. And the nature of the war also provided what we call a distributed battlefield. We had combat outposts, forward operating posts, all over the region in Anbar, which is roughly the size of square miles in the state of North Carolina, so a very large area. But when we did the inspection and looked at the research, in many cases, the targeting was going against convoys were moving a lot of necessary supplies, but much of which was bulk liquid in the form of water. But about 80% of it was also fuels, diesel, the diesel being required to generate, run the generators. The generators were running radios, GPS systems, long-range reconnaissance surveillance cameras, compressors for tools, you name it. We were very, very energy intensive, and that's the good news. Our military is the most capable military, today, but it has a huge appetite for energy in order to fuel those operations. But when we looked at the analysis, we had to find a way to reduce our exposure, our footprint. And we thought that there was probably, at least in the commercial world, there were a lot of technologies, off-the-shelf technologies that would allow us to get away from the fossil-based fuels that were required for generators, namely in the terms of solar and wind, might provide some technologies that would help us reduce that footprint. So we had some very, as I like to call, our very smart officers who were working the issue, and we devised this joint universal needs statement, which was basically a message back to the senior echelons of the military that, look, we need some assistance here. Let's take a look at what's out in the private industry, the private world, that might help us do that. And although it didn't result in anything in that short of a time frame that could help us do that, I think it certainly energized a private industry who was waiting for the call to do that, to find ways to reduce the footprint.
Right.
And that happened 2006, 2007. I retired in 2011. And CNA, the Center for Naval Analyses, as that's kind of their sub-moniker, if you will, was doing a lot of work in that regard. And I think that's what attracted them to me, to be able to contribute to the work that we're doing. And CNA is a not-for-profit,
right,
federally funded research and development center working out of the National Capital Region in Washington.
Well, I want to hear a little bit more about exactly what you've been finding. You say there wasn't all that much. But before I get to that, I want to hear about how energy consumption has changed, because it turns out we're using our military a lot more oil per capita today than it was even in World War II. Do you have the figures on that?
Well, we did. There's a lot of analysis out there, and it's trying to find out what's relevant. But I think just as an example, in World War II, we said basically it took about 1 gallon of gasoline to fuel the operations of every soldier, that was involved in the war effort. Fast forward to where we were here in 2008, 2009, 2010, the model reflects something like it's about 22 gallons per soldier, per Marine, for operations on the ground.
No.
And that reflects this huge appetite that we have developed for energy to operate these highly technical capabilities and equipment sets that we are able to have today, and where it was about $1,100 to equip the average soldier in World War II, that figures more about $17,000 per soldier today. But we're on the threshold of even further innovation and technologies that will drive that somewhere in the order of maybe $40,000 to $60,000 per soldier per Marine. That's based on this high tech equipment, that the source of which ultimately has to be energy.
Yeah.
And it's not about necessarily being cleaner or greener or anything like that. Our interest from a national security perspective,
right,
is it being about lighter, faster, more lethal on the battlefield of tomorrow.
And obviously less vulnerable, fewer supply lines. So if you have 80% of that supply line is fuel, if you can reduce that, you reduce our vulnerability and our exposure. So I take your point. So now the question is, well, how much is out there? I'm trying to imagine these field operations operating by solar or wind power. How much of that at the moment is even practical, given the technology we have right at the moment?
Well, the challenge is the engineering to scale, to be able to take those technologies of solar and wind, and there are other, perhaps, renewables or alternate forms of energy that all represent a future. The Department of Defense has set up an office for Secretary of Defense for Operational Energy that looks DOD-wide over, you know, what's the art of the possible. Each of the departments, the Army, Navy, and Air Force, are also very much energized looking at that, and as I've said in the past, when it gets to testimony season, the department secretaries and service secretaries come to do their testimony. They are all talking about energy. They're all talking about the cost. So I think right now the Department of Defense is in a good place, at least in terms of looking into ways that will provide efficiency but not sacrifice effectiveness.
Right.
And we never advocate for that anything that reduces effectiveness, that's got to be secondary to the efficiency, and that's always been foremost. But I think each of the services are stepping out in their own way. I'm a little bit more familiar with the Marine Corps Warfighting Lab, and their work on the experimental forward operating bases, which is looking at solar cells, insulation, ways of reducing that requirement for bulk fuel to run generators that we need for all the recharging and provision of air conditioning. That, you know, our very sensitive computer equipment works under. It's got to be cooled. So we're stepping out in the right direction. I think one of our concerns, though, is where we are right now in terms of facing an era, if you will, of constrained fiscal budgeting requirements. The budgets are going to come down. So when the services and the department start racking and stacking what the important capabilities are, some of these initiatives may, fall victim to the budget cuts.
Yeah, but it's interesting because in the short run, while you're talking about some capital outlays in R&D, you're talking about saving lots of money later on and not in cutting into industrial power either. You're talking about promoting business in real capital investment so people get jobs and all that. But you have to make the transition from oil and coal, which is heavily invested right now and got the lobbying power, into other industries, which ultimately save the government and me and you some money, right?
Well, and again, sometimes it's hard to be, the difference between it being a penny wise and a pound foolish. I'm just trying to buy that perspective into the future. And I think here, as we draw down to the end of 2014 in combat operations in Afghanistan, I think we are at a pivotal point about where the military goes next. What is the next hill line, if you will? How we innovate for the future. And I would suggest we are probably at a time that's very critical that we understand the future correctly. But again, if it leads to a light, faster force that's more lethal, that's the important measure, because at the end of the day, we're talking about America's talent, the people who pay the price if we are not as forward-looking as we need to be. And it's always a tough sell, but I think the Department of Defense in the past, in terms of research and development, has always had a preeminent position. If you look at development of internet, jet propulsion, Department of Defense has been an innovator, and today we accept those things as commonplace. But we forget that it cost a lot of money years ago to do that. So you're trying to ask industry and government to have faith and confidence in the department to do the right thing. But it is a large technology, and there are a lot of innovations out there, and it's trying to pick those right ones that are going to reveal something at the end of the process. But again, interwar periods are defined by the innovation and adjustments that militaries make, and we're approaching one of those areas right now.
All right, Lieutenant General Richard Zillmer, thank you so much for talking with us.
Frank, thank you for your time, and thanks for your interest in what we're trying to do here.
General Zillmer, retired member of the Marine Corps, advises the nonprofit CNA Corporation about military energy consumption. Going to be speaking at an event co-hosted by the Wake County Young Republicans and Young Conservatives for Energy Reform. That is tonight, 6 p.m., Raleigh at Bolt Bistro. And you can find out more about that at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, secrets come out in a play based on teenage diaries. Find out more on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.